So hello, and today we're speaking with Aaron from Montreal. Hey there, Aaron.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
Wicked. So you're not a student yourself, but you've been sort of checking out a lot of the student strikes that are going on in sort of Montreal and Quebec and things. And could you tell, because it's not getting loads of coverage over here in the UK, so could you tell our listeners a little bit about the student strike, like how it started, what it's all about, what's happening?
Sure. So maybe just kind of like to position myself, I work at a campus community radio station here in Montreal, quite a radical one. It's called CKUT Radio, so I'm the news coordinator here. It's based out of McGill University, which is quite a conservative university. It's really funny because it's one of the few universities in Quebec where a few of the departments went on strike, but, you know, it's actually, if you talk to most students at McGill, they unfortunately don't care about the strike at all. But CKUT Radio is this kind of nice, like, little radical oasis inside McGill where we do a lot of coverage, in-depth analysis of the student strike. So we've been having these regular reports that we call the Red Square Report. Red Square, of course, referring to the symbol of accessible education in Quebec and in Canada that, you know, thousands and thousands of people in Montreal have been wearing these red felt squares on their clothing. So I was a student. I just finished my university studies. Anyways, but maybe to kind of situate the strike historically, there's been a whole series of student strikes in the province of Quebec going back to the 1960s. And it's safe to say there wouldn't even be post-secondary education in the province of Quebec, university education, if it weren't for student strikes. So it was actually a student strike in the late 60s and either in the late 60s or early 70s where there was a student strike to basically demand to have universities in French. And at the same time period, there was a big campaign called McGill Français, because McGill University, again, where CKUT is kind of situated, has been kind of the symbol of Anglophone dominance in a province where even the French-speaking people, the majority, they had kind of been historically oppressed by the kind of Anglo-Saxon minority.
And could I stop you there for a second, and just for our listeners who maybe aren't aware over here in the UK, Quebec is the only dominantly French-speaking province within Canada. There's one other bilingual province, I think, within Canada. And so I think there's been this long historic tradition of English being the dominant language and dominant culture within Canada. And so fighting for French rights and Francophone rights has been quite an important thing, really, in the history. And I don't know if you have anything to add on that, but that's sort of something I think a lot of people over here, it's, people aren't aware because of the colonial privilege that exists and things over here.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of sums it up. I mean, Quebec is a province of 8 million people. You know, the vast majority, at least 6 million of them, are Francophone. And it's a pretty working class, for the most part, culture. It's, you know, one of the poorer provinces where, you know, the unemployment rate has historically been one of the higher ones. Yet at the same time, people in Quebec have traditionally always fought really hard for accessible social services. It's just part of the culture here that you don't really see in other parts of English-speaking Canada. So, you know, and that's a pretty insidious thing when it's like you have this society and it's in the 1960s where the 1960s was a period called the Quiet Revolution. So, you know, prior to the 1960s, the Catholic Church had a real stranglehold on Quebec society, controlling everything from welfare to a lot of parts of the state were very bound up in the Catholic institutions to education as well. And so people were really demanding to have a public, secular, and accessible education system that was in French as well. And so people for a while tried this campaign called McGill Français to actually get McGill, which is an English university, to offer its courses in French. But finally, with that earlier strike, or the first student strike, that led to the creation of UQAM, which is the University of Quebec in Montreal, or Université du Québec à Montréal, and that actually started a whole chain of, I use chain as if it sounds like a corporation, and sometimes universities do resemble more corporations than educational institutions here, but anyways, there's this whole chain of they call them the Université du Québec, so you can find a really good quality and relatively accessible university system across many of the smaller towns and cities in Quebec as well. So that kind of, you know, that earlier strike really set the climate for how Quebecers would feel and how they would mobilize for accessible education throughout the decades to come. And so, you know, if you jump ahead to the 2000s, you see we're in this era of neoliberalism and more recently with austerity measures, where basically, you know, education has been put on the chopping block or on the marketplace and treated as a commodity just like anything else, like electricity, like water that they're trying more and more to commodify, like food. And so there's been, especially in other provinces, this huge move to deregulate tuition fees. And we've seen, for example, in provinces such as British Columbia or Ontario, education fees have just skyrocketed. We're now across Canada, the average debt for students at the time they graduate from university is $25,000. And that's just mm-hmm. the average, right? $25,000. You know, mm-hmm. I know people, for example, who have debts closer to $80,000. And so that's the kind of context. And, you know, people in Quebec have been really adamant that for decades they've been actually demanding for free education. You know, some people in different parts of Canada will look towards the United States where they say, oh, well, like, look, the Americans are paying so much. It's not that bad to pay a little bit here. But here in Quebec, we tend to identify a lot more with different parts of Europe, like, for example, in Scandinavia, where people have free access to post-secondary education. And to actually put that demand on the table and say, like, if you can guarantee free tuition for universities, not only does it kind of, in a way, try to create these, like, classless, you know, I'm talking about social class, of course, institutions where anyone can access them regardless of their income. But it also, in a way, like more conceptually speaking, it says education is not a product. It's not something that you buy. It's something that's an inherent social value. And, you know, we can live in healthier societies when these ideas are freely shared. And so that's kind of at the crux of what people are fighting for now. And sorry, I know I'm kind of like rambling on a bit, but I'll just jump ahead. I mean, there's been quite a few student strikes over the years. Mm-hmm. Each one has been kind of based around a different demand. And none of the student strikes, I shouldn't say none of them, but very few of the student strikes have actually been about getting free education right here and now. Like, for example, this one that we're going through right now, the main demand of the strike is just to try to stop the deregulation from going through, or the tuition hike from going through, which is a really important thing in Quebec. Tuition fee increases is a really important debate of society and how we want to organize our society. And people are actually out in the streets talking not only about free education, but also about preserving our public health care system, you know, making free and accessible child care, completely doing away with capitalism, which is, you know, consistently coming back to screw us. And so it's just like, it's a very, very exciting time to be in Quebec right now. And, you know, people are also, we've heard a lot of people referencing London, England, because mm-hmm. there was, of course, a big student uprising there last year. People are looking towards Chile, where, you know, students were on strike for over a year, lost their semester, but actually made huge gains in their strike. So people are actually starting to wake up and say, you know, this fight against capitalism, and especially against the kind of vicious austerity that we're seeing in 2012, is a global fight. Students are not alone here, and kind of, you know, really putting that internationalist foot forward, which is unbelievably inspiring.
Definitely, because it does seem to be the same thing does seem to be happening here as well, like as they've increased tuition fees to £9,000 a year, which is 18,000 Canadian dollars. It's loads. So it's outrageous, really, what's going on. And but I was wondering if you could you just sort of, because for those of us obviously who can't be there in the streets, can you give us an impression how often are people out in the streets? How big are the demonstrations? How big are the protests? And like what kind of links have they been making with other struggles, sort of like anti-police brutality, stuff about the Plan Nord, perhaps as well, I'm not sure, or Earth Day as well, if you could just tell us a bit about those, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for the last 2.5 weeks, there's been nightly demonstrations in Montreal, which has just been amazing. I mean, on any given night, you'll get at least 5,000 students out in the street, and some of those nightly demonstrations have been as big as 15,000. So yeah, so really large nightly demonstrations. You know, they have a regular starting point, so everyone meets up at Barry Square downtown at 8:30 p.m. And then there's snake marches where they don't tell the police where they're going to go. There's no route that's divulged. In fact, the routes are quite random. You know, people just kind of march wherever they want, and there's no leaders to the marches either. So they kind of just kind of you know, there'll be like little affinity groups up at the front who kind of try to collectively decide which way they want to go. And some of them are quite militant too. It's just really interesting to see, you know, some nights people will try to take over the bridges because, of course, Montreal, the city of Montreal, is an island. So if you can block off the bridges, you can effectively paralyze the city. You know, there's people that bring firecrackers into the demonstrations and are letting off fireworks. There's a really interesting debate right now around diversity of tactics because, you know, for like myself, I've been in anti-capitalist, anti-globalization movements for over a decade. So, you know, I've been around those debates a lot. But for younger students who are 19, 20 years old, it's probably the first time that they've been in a demonstration where people want to use more militant tactics, so smashing bank windows. There was a demonstration last week where some people smashed the window of an army recruitment center. And unfortunately, those people got attacked by so-called pacifists, right? Which, like, the irony of it just slaps you in the face, right? You say you're pacifist, yet you're going to attack a demonstrator who's done nothing but broken a window, and it hasn't actually hurt a human being. But I think it's good in the sense that, you know, whatever, like, people are... there's this kind of pacifist macho attitude that's going on in some of the demonstrations. But at the same time, people are having these debates right now. What is the legitimacy of property destruction? What is the legitimacy of having a militant movement that fights back against the police? And that's something I haven't even seen this debate happen on this much of a scale in like 10 years. So it's great in a lot of ways. There's also, so beyond the nightly demonstrations, there's also economic disruption actions that happen in the morning. So people will pick a spot, let's say it's 7 o'clock in the morning, to gather downtown, and then they go and they try to block different government or financial institutions. So they've blocked the National Bank, they've blocked the Education Ministry building, you know, using that kind of tactic of civil disobedience, right? Like chaining yourself to the doors. And, you know, these students are incredibly brave. Like the level of police brutality that they face is just astounding. I mean, but you're starting to see this really interesting thing with students now because they get pepper sprayed and tear gassed almost daily. It's been happening for the last 2 months where people just don't give a shit anymore. They're just like, they're ready for it. They know how to protect themselves. And they're very defiant. I mean, the cops will attack the demonstrations. The demonstrations will kind of disperse for a couple of minutes and then reconverge. It's a level of militancy that is kind of growing, and that it's not just like your kind of usual anarchist black bloc people who are taking up this militancy too, but it's just, you know, your kind of what you call regular average students. And yeah, in terms of making links to other struggles, well, the police brutality one has been really obvious from the beginning because, I mean, well, what to say about the police other than they're animals. But earlier on in the strike, so it was March the 7th, there was a peaceful civil disobedience action happening where students in Montreal were trying to block access to a building which houses not only Loto Quebec, which is the kind of like national lottery organization, but also an organization called the CREPEC, which is the kind of coalition of university presidents of Quebec. And they're the ones who are really lobbying the government for this tuition increase, you know, the real bastards behind this whole conflict. So people were, you know, engaging in peaceful civil disobedience a la Martin Luther King or Gandhi. And the police came in and viciously attacked this demonstration. There was a young college student named Francis Grenier who was playing the harmonica, just sitting on the ground. Police threw a concussion grenade at him, and this poor student, I believe he's 21 or 22 years old, lost an eye. And if I could say he was the only person who's lost an eye in this strike, that would be a bit of a relief. But actually, just last Friday, there was another quite militant demonstration in a small town in Quebec called Victoriaville, where the cops put out a second student's eye by shooting a rubber bullet into his face, and actually brought another demonstrator to near death. They put him into a coma. The young man bled heavily, and people were genuinely afraid for his life. The police blocked an ambulance from getting through to him. And
really?
I wasn't at that demonstration, but other journalists, friends of mine who have done work in occupied Palestine, said that it was the first time that they'd been here in Canada and actually seen a demonstration that looked like, you know, young Palestinians fighting back against the Israeli army. And that level of state violence too. So it's really interesting to see how students are, you know, actually realizing that, you know, the police are definitely not our friends. They're the enemy in a lot of cases. They're part of the problem. There's a lot of class consciousness being formed, I would say. You know, and I think that there's a lot of ways like the struggle could widen too. I mean, I've heard a lot of kind of interesting and valid critiques about how the student movement is predominantly white, but it's like, what is the work that's being done to outreach? There's always, you know, feminist and queer positive critiques, again, very valid critiques that are being leveled. But people are having these debates, you know. Just the other night in a demonstration, there was like people who were doing really homophobic chants about, you know, they're chanting in French, Charest au prison, mais échappe pas ton savon, which means like Jean Charest, who's the premier, go to jail, but don't drop the soap, you know. And there's like a pink block in the demonstration, like a radical queer block, where just like, why would you like make a joke about rape or about, you know, like queer sex in a demonstration where it's totally uncalled for, you know? And so it's just like, again, it's like, you know, these are really important debates that need to happen. And so it's just really interesting to see that for young students who haven't necessarily been exposed to radical politics before, it's just happening so quickly. And you even see a lot of students who consider themselves to be devout pacifists at the beginning of the strike and then going out and demonstrating peacefully. You know, we had one demonstration here for the student strike on March 22nd, which brought anywhere from 200 to 300,000 people in the streets. I mean, you never see demonstrations like this in Canada. It's really rare. I mean, you know, maybe in London there's been demonstrations of that amplitude over the last few years. But for Canada, it's rare. And it's like when you bring people peacefully out into the streets like that, and when you demonstrate peacefully for weeks and the police do nothing but attack you, then I think it starts to kind of like create a bit of a shift of consciousness in people's minds. And that's kind of where we're at now.
Wow, that sounds great. And so what's going on with the negotiations and what's going to happen to the students and their school year and things like that? Are they going to lose it? And is there also the fear, perhaps, that the demonstrations might run out of steam over the summer holidays and things as well?
Well, that's the big question that's on everyone's mind right now. In terms of losing the school year, it's really unclear at this point because each university, like, different student associations went on strike at different times. So at this point, the ones who have been out the longest have been on strike for, I believe, 13 or 14 weeks right now. It's definitely, like, next week it'll be going into its 14th week, which is exceptionally long, right? Like, the strike started back on February the 14th, and we're in May right now. Mm-hmm. So this is definitely the longest student strike in Quebec's history. Basically, I think only a couple of universities have said we're going to cancel this semester. A lot are saying they can't, right, because they need to basically free up those spaces to take in more high school students next year. And also it's having huge economic reverberations because you have all these jobs that are basically waiting for this new batch of graduates who aren't going to come. And so that, you know, that's going to have a big impact on the economy. But the universities are really kind of staying tight-lipped about whether or not they're going to cancel the semester. In terms of the negotiations, they've been really fascinating to watch because at the very beginning of this strike, the government, and I'm talking not about the federal Canadian government, but of course the provincial government, was very adamant that they said they will not sit down with the student demonstrators and had this totally condescending attitude, even in their language, right? Like, this is a student strike. I mean, people have been using the language of strike because a strike is a collective action you take with your association, be it a labor union or a student union, to vote democratically to carry out an action. But the government and a lot of the mainstream media here have been calling it a boycott, a class boycott, which is, you know, an individual act that you take. And so it's very condescending. And the government said, we will not sit down with the strikers. And then, you know, after 2 weeks of striking and militant demonstrations and blockades and direct actions, they changed their tone. And they said, okay, well, you know, it looks like we have to sit down with the student associations now. They were saying there's basically three main student associations in Quebec, two of which are pretty kind of more liberal reformist, and one which is called Class, which is more anti-capitalist, more radical. The government said they would not sit down with the Class until they condemned violence, which is really interesting. And Class actually kind of did in the end condemn violence. So they sat down at the negotiating table. One window got broken the next night, and then the government called off the negotiations, literally over one broken window. And, you know, but it's just interesting that we've gone through weeks of this, like kind of a cat and mouse game between the government and the student associations, and the government keeps getting forced to put their cards down on the table, and they keep coming up with these offers, which the students just see as total bullshit. The first offer was actually, people called it an outright insult, where they said, okay, rather than raising tuition over 5 years, we're going to raise it over 7 years, but we're going to factor in inflation. And so actually, the final tuition increase is not the original $1,600 that we originally proposed. It's actually going to be $1,700. So they raised the tuition hike, and that just totally enraged people. You know, the last offer they put forward, I won't even get into the details because it's so hazy and Orwellian and incomprehensible. And the government was hoping that the students would accept that and go back to class. And then, again, just this week, all the student associations who are on strike voted overwhelmingly to reject that offer and to keep going with the strike. So in terms of, like, the next steps, there's, like, a big question mark in terms of what's going to happen. Is it going to be the government that's going to cave first? Is it going to be the students? And just to respond to your question about whether or not the students will be able to keep up the steam, I really think they can, and I'm hoping they will, because, you know, again, like, this strike started back in February. It's the longest one so far in Quebec's history. There's an incredible determination where students are saying, well, you know, we've come this far. Why turn back now? You know, the only strike that you lose is the one that you end too soon. And so there's been significant gains already that I think this has the potential to continue on through the summer. I think what it's going to end up doing too is it's going to force provincial elections here in Quebec, because the current government, the Liberal government of Jean Charest, is on its last legs. Their popular support has taken a dramatic fall since the strike started. So there's going to be that, you know, there will probably be an election, as many people are guessing. But, yeah, it's just kind of like, well, we're going to wait and see what happens. But in the meantime, all of these actions, all of the nightly marches are going to continue.
Wow, it sounds great. Exciting times. And just to, for people over here, because there's so much stuff that you've mentioned that we're not really hearing about over here. So if people can check out ckut.ca and you can listen, you can live stream sort of the news. You can live stream the radio station and things via the internet and things over here. Are there any other places that people should sort of stay in touch or stay on top of what's going on over there?
Yes, for sure. So in terms of getting news in English, there's CKUT Radio, but there's also a great website called the Media Co-op, which is mediacoop.ca. And so a lot of news gets posted to there, both in English and in French. And then at Concordia University here in Montreal, there's a TV station called CUTV, and they've actually been doing a lot of live streaming from the demonstrations. So I guess in the UK, it would be pretty late for you guys, but you know, for any night owls who want to check out the live demonstrations, you can go to it's CUTVMontreal.com or .ca, one or the other. The demonstrations and see what's happening for yourself.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for your time and good luck with everything.
Thank you.